budget is spent on men's health?
You're right, I hadn't. So that's what we're not told?
Correct. What you're also not told is that the other 85% is on non-gender-specific health issues, basic science.
What about more studies being done on men than on women?
When we search the 3,000 medical journals that are listed in Index Medicus, 23 articles are written on women's health for each one written on men's health.
What about what we've heard about heart disease studies being done on men but not on women, such as the study that related to the effects of aspirin on heart attacks done only on male physicians?
It's interesting. The whole nation heard of that study, but no one heard that there was a simultaneous study done on the effect of aspirins on heart attacks done only on female nurses, in which four times as many women were studied as in the male study.
Aren't there many other studies done only on groups of men?
Yes. A high percentage of those studies, though, have been experimentation studies. Studies, for example, done of potentially dangerous drugs that were done on all male prisoners or on military men. Studies on LSD, on sulfa drugs, things like that. The reason we do more research on men in prison and men in the military and on men in general than we do on women is for the same reason we do more research on rats than we do on humans.
Wow. But isn't there neglect of certain areas of female health, like breast cancer?
Personally, I think all health research is neglected compared to other priorities. But we have to remember that men are almost as likely to die from prostate cancer as women are from breast cancer. Yet our funding for breast cancer is 660% greater than our funding for prostate cancer research. If it was the other way around, I would be protesting the sexism against women.
Now, what about the neglect for women's health issues such as ovarian cancer and menopause?
Fortunately, the neglect is now being remedied by the new Office of Research on Women's Health, but there's no Office of Research on Men's Health addressing any of the 17 areas of men's health that are now being neglected.
17? Some examples.
Testicular cancer, nonspecific urethritis, the development of a men's birth control pill, looking at the issues that create and could prevent male suicide, post-traumatic stress syndrome, circumcision as a possible trauma-producing experience, dyslexia, the underlying causes of male violence, the factors that lead to men being 85% of the homeless, rehabilitation methods to prevent recidivism of the 94% of prisoners who are men, sexual impotence, colorblindness, steroid abuse, so on.
Can I get back to the heart attacks for a moment? Isn't it true that women dying now of heart attacks, that that's occurring at the same rate as men?
It's interesting, but we've all heard that, and technically speaking, that's true. But what very few of us have heard is that almost three-quarters of women who die of heart attacks are 75 years old or older. By that time, the average man has already been dead for 3 years.
Now, I've also heard that men with heart attack symptoms are more likely to receive the most advanced and effective operations. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. But what we don't hear is the reason. The woman is much more likely to have her heart attack symptoms when she's much older. Therefore, she's likely to have a lot of other complications as well. Therefore, surgery is more likely to end her life because of the other complications.
Surgery is much more dangerous for somebody who's that much older.
Exactly. And what we're not told is that the 50-year-old man who has his heart attack symptoms is much less likely to have those other complications, therefore he's more likely to be able to risk surgery. So in brief, when age and other complicating factors are controlled for, studies show that there's no difference between the treatment of men versus the treatment of women with heart attacks.
You know, given all this, it sounds like what you're saying is that the real sexism is in the concern that we've expressed for women versus the lack of concern that we express for men.
Exactly. And the sad thing, though, is that when one sex loses, both sexes lose. A woman who loses her husband, her dad, or her son also loses. Or put another way, when just one sex appears to win, both sexes lose.
You mentioned in your chapter on the insanity track, which deals with men at the top, that these men are not really powerful because power is control over one's own life, and that these men at the top often lose control over their life. Do you feel this is true even of people like lawyers and doctors?
Yes, I think it is. The alcoholism rate among lawyers is about twice as high as it is among the general population. 41% of lawyers would enter another profession if they had to do it all over again. Among doctors, first-year residents in pediatrics and obstetrics average 90 hours per week. And one additional point, 1 in 10 surgical residents exceed 122 hours per week.
What happens when men just say no to providing this financial womb, as you call it?
And just say no, as in Nancy Reagan. When men just say no, so to speak, they become invisible, especially, unfortunately, to women. Or they become ostracized, often by both sexes. For example, black men are often the subject of ridicule by black women and have been for many years. American Indian men or Native American men were admired until they no longer protected women effectively, and then they were confined to the reservations of their defeat. And gay men, the men who wouldn't protect women, have been ostracized by both sexes in almost all cultures.
And as you've pointed out before, unemployed and homeless men are not being sought out by the Marla Maples of the world.
Right.
It would follow from what you've been saying that we would be far more concerned with women as victims of violence than we would be with men as victims of violence. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. For every woman who is murdered, 3 men are murdered. With the exception of rape, the more violent the crime, the more likely the victim is to be a man. Forcible rape constitutes less than 4% of all violent crimes. Violent crime of which men are the victims constitute 94%.
Of course, men do commit most of the violent crime.
Yes, it's interesting that when we hear that blacks are the greater victims of violent crimes, we would consider it racist to say, well, blacks commit most of the violent crime against blacks, so therefore, the victim is a victim, no matter who the perpetrator was.
Are we less sympathetic towards men because we think of violence as being a reflection of male power?
Yes, I think that is the reason that we are less sympathetic. But I also would like to challenge that reason as being inaccurate. Violence is almost always the outgrowth of powerlessness, not power, be it black powerlessness or male powerlessness.
Tell me about that.
My first education on this issue came in the mid-80s when Flint, Michigan, at that time was a town with a very low rate of rape, murder, and spouse abuse. And then, as you probably remember, the 30,000 auto workers were either unemployed or dislodged from their jobs when the General Motors plants shut down.
Uh-huh.
And Flint, Michigan, within a year or two, soon had a higher rate of violent crime than New York City. It reported 285 rapes in 1985 alone, which was a staggering figure for a city of 150,000 people. In brief, people become violent and criminals when there's a gap between their expectation to provide and their ability to provide. When they experience powerlessness, they become criminals, not power.
You know, Warren, after hearing all this, there's one question that really troubles me. Why is it that all of us, both males and females, seem to be so resistant to hearing and to understanding how men are hurt?
Historically, woman as victim attracts men. Man as victim repulses woman.
Oh, yeah.
Almost every day we see this acted out. When you see a woman's tire go flat, for example, she will suddenly allow a strange man off the highway an opportunity to help her. But if a man's tire goes flat, she rarely stops to help the man, despite the fact that when his tire goes flat, she has much more of an opportunity to look him over first. Historically, women dropped handkerchiefs, that is, they played victims. And when they dropped the handkerchief, this was a way of discovering where the saviors were located. When men dropped handkerchiefs, we picked them up. And we see the result of this sort of repulsion toward men as victim everywhere. Corporal punishment is still legal in 29 states, but practically speaking, corporal punishment is boy punishment. The same type of thing with capital punishment. Practically speaking, it is male-only punishment. We consider it racist to hit black boys more than white boys, but no school protests the propensity to hit only boys.
Okay, let's look at this point. Feminists have objected to violence against women on TV and in films. Is that a valid issue?
I think we're definitely a society that's addicted to violence, but I'd like to confront our violence toward both sexes. In fact, of people who are killed on TV entertainment programs, about 97% are men. In the movies, it's about 95% men. Six of our most popular film types are men-die films. Westerns are men killing men. War movies are men killing men. Murder mysteries are men killing men. Women in Jeopardy films are mostly men killing men. Mob films are men killing men. Gang films, the same thing. We repeatedly pay to watch the murder of men by men.
Why does it seem like there's a higher percentage of women dying?
Because we care so much more when a woman dies, or even when she's hurt. Which is why entire films focus on the woman in jeopardy. It makes us care. But almost always in a Women in Jeopardy film, the woman is saved, in fact, while many men usually die saving her. Our concern is for the woman, but the sacrifice is of the man. A man who puts a woman in jeopardy is unforgiven, which is, of course, what was unforgiven in the film Unforgiven. One woman was hurt in that film, and about a dozen men were killed in the process of teaching a couple of men that they better not even hurt a woman. Notice I said, by the way, about a dozen men. I don't even know if it was exactly a dozen. The men who died were actually less visible than the one woman who was hurt.
Part three of the myth of male power, perhaps the most powerful and shocking section of the book. It's called The Government as Substitute Husband. You have chapter titles in that part such as Women Who Kill Too Much and The Courts That Free Them, which sounded more like a spoof until I started reading about the 12 different female defenses, such as the battered woman syndrome, that allow a woman to kill a man and get a reduced sentence or go free on probation, without a man in a parallel situation having that option. Would you start out by explaining what you mean by the government as substitute husband?
Yes, okay. When divorces left women without a husband as savior, many women started to look for substitute saviors. The poor woman looked to AFDC payments, for example.
Aids to families with dependent children.
Exactly. If the government paid more than the man could, she in essence would choose the government over the man, in a sense marry the government. This was especially reinforced by the fact that the government would only give AFDC payments to her if the man wasn't around.
Would it give AFDC payments to the man if the woman wasn't around and the man took care of the children?
Basically, no. The requirements for a man to get AFDC payments were much tougher and virtually impossible, which is, of course, unconstitutional, but yet it exists. The government did not play substitute wife either by providing the man domestic services or by providing the man income.
But you're saying that in the past years, since the rise of the feminist movement, the government has played substitute husband to more middle-class women as well.
Yes. Programs, for example, like WIC, which is a Women, Infants, and Children program, these were increasingly developed for women, for infants, for children, but not for men, infants, and children. And as women entered the workplace, the government passed more laws to protect women from dirty jokes than to protect men from death via faulty rafters at construction sites.
It's funny. The more things change.
Yes, and you see this even among New Age women and men. New Age women often went from father to husband to guru, and men, we competed to be their guru. In the name of enlightenment, neither sex was fundamentally changing their fundamental role. What had been true among traditional women and men, for example, going from father to husband to God the Father, and men competing to be their fathers in the form of either priests or ministers or rabbis, really wasn't that much different than it was among New Age women and men.